Hello, everyone. My name is Derek Van Dam, and welcome to Make a Difference Radio. Our show will air every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Each week, we will spotlight a different nonprofit organization and the people and businesses that support them. We are trying to create an awareness of their cause and assist them in spreading their message, as well as show the community ways they can get involved with helping them. We will also be placing a strong emphasis on corporate responsibility because given the continued state of our economy, it is now more important than ever that businesses do their part to help these great organizations. The show is brought to you today by Swipe for Change, whose mission is to create consistent and recurring donation streams for nonprofit organizations by leveraging business merchant accounts at no additional cost to the business. Please visit swipeforchange.com or call 1-800-219-5727 for more information. Our topic today is the challenge of men's health, and our guest that's going to speak to us about that is Joe Blumberg. Joe is the executive director of Men's Health and Wellness Center. He helped found the organization in 2007 after his diagnosis of advanced prostate cancer. The MHWC is a nonprofit organization serving men over 40 and their loved ones. The vision is to minimize the seven-year longevity gap between men and women. The MHWC provides education, screening, and support services to encourage men to know their numbers and to make healthier lifestyle choices leading to disease prevention, healthy living, and improved quality of life. Mr. Blumberg is an electrical engineer graduate, holds a Master of Science degree from Case Western Reserve University, which majors in organizational behavior and computer science. He has taught at Temple University and Eastern Michigan University. He authored Finders Keepers, an experimental guide for IT managers, and Ducks Can Catch Mice, a handbook for IT consulting. He is a consultant speaker on IT and healthcare issues. Joe, welcome today.
Well, it's glad to be here. Glad to have the opportunity to talk about the Men's Center and some of the issues related to men's health.
One of the big things that you obviously is that big age discrepancy that we have between how long men and women live. What is the big reason that you attribute to that?
Well, it's really an issue that we don't have a lot of information about. And, there's been a lot of conjecture around why do women live longer than men. One of the reasons is that from a medical standpoint, we think that estrogen does some things to protect the heart, and therefore women have less of an incidence of cardiac disease than men do. And consequently, since it seems as though cardiac disease is the number one killer of men, if we were able to get the balance better so that there was more estrogen and as a male hormone instead of a female hormone, maybe that might change. Then there's the anecdotal information that says women teach their daughters how to engage the medical community. Preventive health is much more of a reality with women than it is for men. There are the childbearing years, and so, you find women who take their daughters to their first visit with a gynecologist, and they understand that they must get tested on a regular basis and maintain their health through that very, very important period up until the woman is maybe 35 or 40 years of age. If you look at men, that whole period of time between the ages of, say, 17 and 35 is a time of invincibility. We just don't engage the medical community. We don't do testing the way we ought to, where women will teach their daughters. I have spoken to men who have children going off to college, male children going off to college. And we know that testicular cancer can be an issue. And you tell a man, have you ever taught your son how to do a testicular self-examination? Their eyes get the size of saucers. They look at you like you have two heads. And it's never any idea that has crossed their mind at any point in time. These are the kinds of issues that are critical. And, you know, we have women who continually talk to each other about health issues. They share information. Men don't do that. We're stoic. Not only are we stoic in the way we treat our own health, but we go to stoic providers. A physician would much rather talk to you about the starting lineup for the Braves or whether or not Matt Ryan's going to break some other record this year than he would to sit down and try to answer some kind of a health question that you might have. So, you know, if you put together the medical issues with the, you know, the anecdotal issues, the psychological issues that are attributed to men versus women, I think that all of these things contribute to the longevity gap, which still is somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 years. There are certain studies you can look at that tell you that it could be less than that. I've seen some that come out that say that we're reducing that gap. We're getting it down into the 6 year range, maybe even into the 5+ year range. But we still have it. There is still this difference. And, you know, if I don't know, if you look at around and you look at the centurions that are available or that are living in this country today, I don't know what the percentages are exactly, but my guess is that at least 2/3, probably 3/4 or even 80% are women, not men.
Really? Wow. Yeah, I understand that stoic male philosophy. I've never engaged in it myself. I tend to go to the doctor just about over everything. I don't want to call myself a hypochondriac, but I like to think I don't fall into that category. But I certainly know my fair share of men that do. I like to think of it as they put their head in the sand philosophy in regards to their health. A very close friend of my family lost 60 pounds and just thought everything was normal about that. You know, when people in their 50s lose 60 pounds, they should generally consider that that's a warning sign for something. And unfortunately, in his case, he didn't, and he passed away 6 months later from renal failure. And these are the kind of things that happen when people don't pay attention to their bodies and aren't willing to go in. I mean, obviously, awareness is the key.
Well, it is the key. You know, men, first of all, we don't pay attention to those issues that that impact us, and we think that a number of those things are normal. You know, how many times do we talk about playing with pain? You know, no pain, no gain. Well, pain is not normal. Pain is there for a reason. It tells the body that there's something going on that shouldn't be going on. So, you know, when we think about the fact that we may have discomfort, we may have pain, we may see symptoms of some type of disease, and guys think we're going to play through it. You know, somehow we're going to overcome it over time. And all you have to do is work harder, exercise more, and that's going to take care of it. Unfortunately, it doesn't in all those cases, and consequently, you know, it is an issue. Men, as you pointed out, really aren't aware. I mean, we're certainly aware of those things that impact us when I talk about things like pain and so on and so forth, but we're really not aware of those silent conditions because we don't get ourselves screened the way we ought to get ourselves screened. And, you know, we see high school football players who are taken down by some form of cardiac disease. And you would think that they've had some type of a physical examination and it would have uncovered that. But it doesn't in all those cases. We really need to be able to look at a certain body of tests. Men, as we age, require certain types of screenings. There are screens that are required of men in the 20s to 30s. There are screens in the 30s to 40s, 40s to 50s, and so on. We don't totally agree with some of the guidelines that are put out by the American Cancer Society and the United States Preventive Health Commission because, you know, they're providing information for the masses. And to a large extent, they're talking about, you know, ways to control healthcare costs in this country. Well, you know, when you're doing screening type things, you're going to incur some healthcare costs. And, you know, to say, let's not do the screenings because it's going to be costly is really counterproductive, because what you're doing now is you're waiting to treat the disease, which is far more costly,
of course,
than it would be to be having some type of preventive medicine that would hold things in check so that you're not dealing with the disease conditions later on in life.
Yeah, I think the old adage about an ounce of prevention, pound of cure, seems to come to mind in regards to that situation. So I can definitely see why that would be the case. I've had my own theory also a little bit on the men longevity issue, and you tell me whether or not my theory is based on any fact at all. But do you think there's also a possibility that men don't eat as well as their female counterparts?
Wow. That opens a whole can of worms. You know, men typically don't eat well. I mean, that's just it's just who we are. If you know, could we reduce the longevity gap if we would stay away from fast food restaurants? I tend to think probably yes.
Right.
I mean, it certainly would have a positive effect on us. Now, at the same time that I say that, you know, take a look at what's going on in the fast food restaurant business. I mean, you're seeing healthy choices are coming up on the menus. And so, you know, rather than going through the line and getting the 8-ounce hamburger, you can go through and get a salad. And those things can be far more beneficial. Now, why do women do that? Well, women do it because in most situations, women tend to be a little bit more concerned about how they look, because what they're
right.
trying to do is not necessarily impress guys. That's not the issue, but they're wanting to look good for other women. And because they know that there is a direct link between calorie intake and how they look, they go after the healthier choices, which can allow them to, you know, still maintain a healthy lifestyle and still enjoy the benefits of tasty food, and at the same time get the positive impact of all of the minerals and vitamins and things like that that are available to us in green leafy vegetables.
That's a great point. Yeah, I definitely think the men need to steer a little bit more clear of the red meat. A challenge of my own as well. I speak from experience in that. Well, you had talked earlier about screenings and mentioning different time frames in men's life for screenings. What would you recommend to a man over 40? How often should they go in for either just a general annual physical or a PSA? What's a normal period of time that you'd recommend?
In our view, men need to be screened regularly once they reach 40 years of age. I'll even take that a step further and say that in the African American community, they probably should start looking at some of these screens when they're 35 years of age. But the idea behind it is that you want to know what your trends are. You want to know what your numbers are. Every man should really understand their numbers. And when I talk about their numbers, I'm talking about really the basic items of medical information that give you a barometer for how well you're doing. Now, when I say that, I'm also saying that a piece of that, yeah, the numbers are great, but it's also how you feel.
Sure.
You know, if you feel good, great. Okay, your numbers may be a little off, but if you're feeling good and everything is fine, because we all know that we react differently, we all have different metabolisms, we all have different family history, our gene structures are totally different, and the way we handle some of the things that can impact us from a health standpoint change from person to person. Not everybody responds to the potential for disease or illness in the same way. But the basic tests where everybody should have their numbers are, first of all, they should know what their blood pressure is. And, you know, these numbers have been pretty stable for a long time. You know, if your blood pressure is 120 over 80, that means your systolic over the diastolic is 120 over 80. That's the range. If that's normal for you, that's excellent, and you can feel good about that. Now, if you're really an athlete and you're working out regularly and you're trying to keep your systolic low, it could be less than 120, and you could have your diastolic being down in the 70 range. But that's excellent if you can maintain that. And, you know, some of us maintain that by using medication, but that's okay as long as we're able to control our blood pressure in a certain range. But we should know what it is, and we should track it, and we should watch it. How often do you take your blood pressure? When I say regularly, well, probably wouldn't hurt to take your blood pressure at least once a quarter, once every 3 months, just to see what it looks like. And you can do that in a drugstore. You can get a blood pressure monitor. You can get it in a lot of different ways. But just know what it is and track it. The other thing, you want to know what your risk is for cardiovascular disease and stroke. And you track that in most cases through using cholesterol. So you want to know what your total cholesterol is. And, you know, certainly there is a body of medicine out there that says lower is better. But you need a certain amount of cholesterol because cholesterol does do some very positive things for the body.
HDL, right.
Yeah, it does. It actually moves blood through your system. It protects certain cells in the body, and you want the good cholesterol to be higher. People say, well, it should be 200 or less. That should be the right number for cholesterol. And that's probably true. But, you know, when you get people who are trying to keep their cholesterol down under 150 and so forth, they could actually be doing themselves more harm than good. But they need to know what their ratio is. They need to know what the ratio is of their high high cholesterol, or good cholesterol,
right,
and the low lipid cholesterols. And, you know, the ratio should be 4 to 1 for total cholesterol to HDL.
Okay. I've always used a way to remember that. HDL, I think the H for healthy, and the LDL, I think for lousy. It's just
that's exactly right.
How I've used it to always remember it.
That's exactly right.
It's keeping
right.
That in proportion. It really is the LDLs that we have to take particular attention to. I think the overall number, straight to your point, probably doesn't need to be focused on nearly as much as that number. How about triglycerides? I've heard a lot of talk about that as well. Is that something that we should be paying close attention to?
Well, yes. I mean, triglycerides are an item where you're really talking about the buildup of fatty acids in the blood. And, you know, if you've got a lot of that going on, the likelihood is you could be building up plaque in your arteries, and that's not a good thing. So you want to try to keep your triglycerides down low. But if you're controlling your cholesterol levels, generally speaking, the triglycerides sort of ride along with that. So, you know, there's a lot of things out there. One of them is called statin drugs. And, you know, statin drugs seem to be very, very safe. If you need a statin drug to help control your cholesterol levels, go ahead and do it. And now that I guess Lipitor has come off of patent and it's now can be available in a generic format, and that's been the most prominently prescribed statin drug out there. It's something that is available to us. It protects the heart. It does a lot of good things for us. But the other thing that we really need to talk about, there's two other tests we really need to talk about because they impact our health in so many different ways. But one of those is our blood glucose level. Some people call it an A1C, but as a better measure. But what we're really talking about here is diabetes.
Right.
And diabetes in the U.S. today is like an epidemic. I mean, it is gone crazy. A lot of that is because we're so obese as a general population, and the male portion of that population
right.
certainly is a part of that.
I've heard it's one-third of the U.S. population of adults and one-sixth of children.
Yeah, and that's that doesn't surprise me. But, you know, we really need to monitor our blood glucose because there's an awful lot of people walking around today with diabetes, literally, and don't know about it because it can be a silent, very silent killer. And so, you know, what we recommend is at least once a year, once you reach age 40 or 35 in the African American community, but you go in and you get your blood glucose checked. And there are plenty of opportunities to do that as well. I mean, in most cases, it's just a finger stick. It's a simple test, and we can get a reading on blood glucose levels. And, you know, where do you want it to be? Well, you know, preferably you'd like it to be less than 90, but, you know, it can be up into the 110 range, 120 range, pre-diabetic, so to speak, and you can control a lot of that through your intake of food, you know, staying away from the sugar, staying away from the big carbs and things like that.
Potatoes,
especially white.
Right.
You know, anything white that then translates into sugar. But we need to monitor it because, you know, it leads to so many other very serious issues. I mean, you can lose a limb. You know, as a result of diabetes, you begin to get neuropathy. You know, you begin to get this fuzzy feeling in your fingertips and your feet and so on and so forth. And, you know, that's sometimes the first symptoms that people see, you know, with respect to knowing that they actually have diabetes. So that's one of the things we need to monitor and watch. And then there's the PSA levels. You know, there is the U.S., you know, Preventive Medicine Task Force that came out with this guideline saying that that they didn't believe that the PSA test was a good test. And it isn't a great test, but it's the only test we have right now to be able to tell us whether or not we're having a potential problem with prostate cancer. And, you know, 40 years, we think, is definitely the age to start the preventive task force as 50 years of age. But, you know, it's pretty important, we think, that at least once every 2 years, guys go in and get the blood work done in order to be able to determine what their PSA level is. And what you're really looking for is you're looking for change in the PSA level. You know, the hard number is just one thing, but you know, we are looking for variation, and if it's increasing over a period of time, especially if it's increasing over 20%, let's say in a year to 2 years, you probably want to get it checked out to make sure that we're not dealing with prostate cancer.
And I guess with a biopsy, is that usually how they figure that out?
That's how they do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Exactly.
Great. So it sounds to me like, you know, one of the big ways of prevention for this, one of the biggest ways that men can make a difference is just basically lifestyle choices. I mean, they have to be, A, more disciplined, and B, just a lot more open to the idea of visiting a doctor, getting themselves checked out. I mean, that's pretty much the best ways that you think to help in the prevention?
Well, it is. But, you know, it's... When we talk to men, and interesting that you bring that up because we just did that. We just did a series of focus groups in talking to men, trying to get an understanding of why men don't go to a doctor. And there's two big major issues. One is that a great body of men don't have a primary care physician. You know, they don't have the counterpart of what women have, which are a gynecologist, which is a defined medical specialty. Guys don't have that. And, you know, I think that's one of the major issues surrounding men and men's health. You know, when you begin to talk about women and you begin to talk about women's health, there are a certain series of defined medical problems, conditions, issues that are associated with women. These are far less obvious when you begin to talk about men. And, you know, men just do not have a primary care physician to go to. And their other options are really limited. Because if you think about, okay, I'm going to stop at a doc in the box. I'm going to stop at one of the clinics that's in the area. I'm going to try to go in somewhere and get my numbers checked. When you go into these facilities, they are primarily set up to cater to women and children, not to men.
Interesting.
It's a demeaning situation for most men because they go in, these places are staffed by women, half of the reception area is usually dedicated to a children's play area, and it's just not a men's kind of thing. We sit down and we look for a magazine. Well, if we're interested in Good Housekeeping or Living Magazine or People Magazine, we can find one. If we're lucky enough to find a Sports Illustrated, it's usually 3 years old, and we're going to find out how the Eagles are going to do in the Super Bowl. You know, it's one of those kind of things.
Right.
So there just is not that kind of a facility around that's dedicated to something for men. You know, if as we talked to men and we said, you know, can you name a women's hospital in the city of Atlanta? Well, of course you can. You have Northside Hospital. It's the women's program there. If you look at the Northside Hospital magazine, it is almost 100% totally devoted to women and women's issues. You say, do you know a children's hospital in the area? Well, of course, you've got Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. I mean, everybody knows that that exists. It used to be Scottish Rite, but okay, that is the hospital. You say, do you know of a men's hospital in Atlanta that deals with men's issues?
No.
No, not really. And that's because there just is no place to go. So now you talk to a guy, well, do you want to go to an emergency room? I don't have a primary care physician. I don't have some place to go that's right off the top of my head that I know I can go get screened for men's issues. And they're going to be receptive to talking about my issues as a man. Now, that just doesn't exist. You also have an issue where there's an awful lot of men in the area who just are underinsured. Some of them have no insurance because they've lost their job and just aren't, they're willing to roll the dice and they have no insurance. Or they've got a high deductible plan, so the first $5,000 in coverage comes out of their pocket. And
right.
Consequently, they don't want to look at a bill for $350 or $500 for screening services because that is costly and it's you know, not something that you want to incur on a, when I say regular basis, at least yearly basis or even a bi-yearly basis. So, you know, these are issues why we don't go and get ourselves checked out the way women go and get themselves checked out. And, you know, we are seriously considering the creation of a facility somewhere which is dedicated to men. And it's going to be, you know, receptive in terms of the environment. It's going to be a male-focused environment. And at the same time, you know, it'll be staffed by people who are ready, willing, and able to deal with men's health issues. And so, you know, we think that this will be very beneficial to the community. And, you know, we think that men will be willing to come there, you know, in order to be able to get themselves screened. Because it's not a place they're going to go to every week. You know, so it doesn't have to be at the end of the block. It can be
right.
Somewhere else that's in a central location that they can come get themselves screened on some of these critical issues. And, you know, if, you know, when you think about men and getting themselves checked out, when do we go and get ourselves checked out? We think we have a sexually transmitted disease, you know. So now we go in. And they don't want to go into a women's clinic and say, hey, guys, I think I need to be checked for STD, you know.
Right.
And, you know, it's just the community is not set up to be receptive to guys.
Right. Sounds like a project that you've spent some time on already. How far in the works is this possibly away? Where are we looking from this?
Well, it's my hope that something like this will be available in the next 6 to 8 months.
Wonderful.
And that's what we're shooting for.
Probably breaking ground in 6 to 8 months, and then open a while after that.
Yeah. So. Well, I'm not. We're not necessarily looking to break new ground and build a new building or do something like that. I mean, we're looking around for some space that might be available to us and so on. The question is, we have to start by putting one foot in front of the other. We have to start small and eventually build something that has some significance in terms of its size. I guess one of the other issues, too, is, you know, when we think about it, we want it to be open at a time when men are willing to come. And, that may be like from 7 in the morning till 7 o'clock at night. You don't find a doctor's office that's necessarily open until 7 o'clock in the night from 7 in the morning.
Yeah, good point.
And also on a Saturday. You know, we'd want it to be staffed on a Saturday so that men could come to it. At a time when they're available, you know, and not working.
Makes tremendous sense. Yeah, it's sometimes it's the last thing you want to do is create an obstacle for men to go into the doctor, and just having normal business hours could be that obstacle if they're working. It's that makes total sense.
Exactly right.
Well, that's great. All right, so you had mentioned men should be checked at least once a year for regular blood work, at least every other year after 40 on PSA. Good point that you made on the lack of a primary care physician, because what you mentioned on the PSA before is about you really kind of have to have a baseline. It's not so much about the number, it's about the percentage change. So if a man is just going into a doc in the box and getting handed a sheet of paper that gives his levels, unless that person is comparing it to previous tests done, they're not going to have an accurate ability to see whether it has changed. Whereas if they do have one physician that they can go to constantly, that doctor really can say to you, hey, last time you were here it was this, and now it's this.
Yes, that's true. Our plan is to track this for them. In other words, you give a guy a piece of paper, he's going to lose it. Or he's going to, wrap up his gum in it and throw it in a trash can somewhere. But the thing that we can do, I mean, the technology is there today to be able to track this information. It's not costly to do that, but it's the ability to give them fair warning about radical changes in their numbers, and we can send that information to them even via cell phone. It's not something that we have to do with a physical piece of paper, but you can send it via cell phone. You can even follow up with them on a cell phone, because you have a periodic Q&A kind of thing. Did you take some action on it? Was prescription medication offered? Did you have access to it? Did you take it? Did it improve your condition? We can do all of these kind of things using technology that's available to us. But what we really want to know is the fact that, if they were made aware of the condition and they knew in some cases that it could be life-threatening, did they take action? The theory is that they will. And, the cost be damned. There are options out there for getting health care services, even if you're destitute or homeless. The idea is, excuse me, to make sure that men get the information they need so that they can translate that information into some form of action, even if it's all of a sudden walking 3 miles a day or getting into a health club or doing something that gets them off the couch so that they're not sedentary anymore, but they're doing the kind of thing that can keep them healthy.
Yeah, I've heard wonderful things about walking and its health benefits to a person, that a person should walk at least 30 minutes a day. I've heard that that's amazing what that can do to help.
Yeah, it does. And, if you can walk at a brisk pace so that you actually get your heart rate up, it's even better.
Right.
And, you know, it doesn't even have to be done all at once. You know, if you can do 10 minutes three times a day, you can get the same cardiac benefits all the way around. And so, you know, walking is great. We highly recommend it as a way of getting people into some sort of a healthcare regimen. I mean, it is a lifestyle thing. You know, if your lifestyle is to lay in bed until 8:30 in the morning, that's one thing. If your lifestyle is to get up at 6:30 and go out and walk for 30 minutes, that's something else. But it's it's very interesting because most men, you know, even if you do go to a doctor, you know, you walk out of the doctor's office and what did the doctor tell you? Well, the doctor said I should eat better and I should exercise more. I don't know how to eat better. I don't know how to exercise
more. That's not a whole lot of guidance.
Yeah, that doesn't tell me a lot. And what we want to be able to do is to offer really some very, very clear advice. You know, based upon your condition, here is a way in which you can exercise more. Based upon what you're doing, here's a way you can eat a healthier menu. And it doesn't have to be costlier. You know, healthier is not necessarily costlier. You know,
right.
People say, oh, my gosh, you know, if I've got to go eat healthier, I've got to buy everything at Whole Foods. And, you know, I can't afford to go to Whole Foods. Well, yeah, you can. Whole Foods doesn't, I mean, their prices are very competitive and, you know, not everything has to be organic, you know. So, I mean, there are ways in which you can do the things you need to do in order to be able to make healthier lifestyle choices.
Sure. I think a head of lettuce costs a dollar. I don't think that's something out of people's reach.
Right, right, exactly.
Now,
most people.
What's your opinion on the aspirin issue? I've always been a big follower of Dr. Oz. He tends to be a little bit higher on the dosage for the aspirin for men. He says 35 and over for men, 40 and over for women. What's your take on the aspirin issue?
Well, once again, I have to say, you know, I'm not a doctor.
Right.
I'm talking about everything that I do from the standpoint of some experience or knowledge about guys and what guys do. But a quarter grain aspirin daily is probably a good regimen to help maintain a healthy heart.
So one baby aspirin a day.
One baby aspirin a day can be very, very beneficial.
Starting at what age for men?
Well, that's a great question. I candidly started doing the baby aspirin thing when I was 30.
Wow.
And, you know, that was at the advice of a physician. But then again, I have a family history of high cholesterol and heart disease.
That makes sense then.
So, you know, I mean, my parents both are deceased and died of cardiac issues. I believed walking around that I had a big, you know, target on my back that said cardiac disease, and somehow as I got older, I was going to develop some form of cardiac disease. So I spent a great deal of my life trying to make sure that my heart stayed healthy. Who knew that prostate cancer was going to be the thing that would get
right.
to me? Yeah, just it. No family history there, no information to deal with. But, you know, once again, I don't want to minimize that because I brought that up, family history. Gosh, it's so important to know what your family history is. You know, can it be different for you? Yeah, it can be different for you. But, you know, if you do have family history of any of these things, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, prostate cancer, or any soft tissue cancer, it doesn't even have to be prostate cancer. But if you've got a family history of any of those issues, then you have to do the things that are necessary to monitor what can be your downfall. Because, you know, automatically you've got a 1 in 8 chance of developing a similar condition, and then it could be exacerbated because depending upon the number of direct line, ancestors you have that had similar conditions, it can go to a 1 in 4 chance, 1 in 2 chance. I mean, there's all kinds of statistical issues associated with prior family conditions, and it's important. So, you know, as a matter of fact, you know, I would say that if you have family history of any of these things, then you need to start monitoring them by at least 30 years of age, if not sooner. We've got we have incidents now where we know that when somebody has had really a strong family history of certain kinds of illness, we've seen occurrences of that in with them once they reach the age of 20 or their mid-20s.
Right, right.
And
now, there are genetic screenings out there that people can take that should give them a good idea to find out whether or not some of those genes from their parents that have captured over to them. Are those tests fairly accurate?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The genetic markers are there, and yes, they're pretty accurate. They're not a, you know, they're not a sentence in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
But the markers are there, and yes, they can be quite accurate. I mean, we know of both men and women who do things prophylactically because of a strong family history. I have a very good friend who had his prostate removed because of a strong family history, even though there was no evidence for him that he had prostate cancer. Oh. But, you know, we see that from time to time. And, you know, again, because I'm not a doctor, I can't tell you which markers I would suggest you go look for or which one's there. But they are there.
Right. That's great. Well, it's good to know that there are tools out there at people's disposal that they can use to be able to determine this. There are some people that are adopted that don't necessarily know what their parents' genetic makeup was because they didn't have any interaction with them, and there's ways that they can find that out. And that's I think that that's important for them to know that that's out there.
It is. And, you know, that's, you know, there are all kinds of, I don't know, soothsayers and people in the community who, you know, think that there's something wrong with trying to seek out your birth parents and so forth. But from a health standpoint, it's a highly recommended
option. Yeah, that makes sense.
Option.
Makes sense. Well, good. Do you have any last recommendations or advice that you could offer men, really of any age, of other things that they should be doing right now?
I think the one thing that we can just touch back on, but go and find out what your family history is. Mm-hmm. Talk to your father, talk to your mother, talk to any living relatives. Find out if you can what issues have occurred in the family and with what relatives and how close they were, if you can find out that information. The other thing, and I'm gonna put this challenge out there to every man. I'm also going to put it out there, you know, as women go, to get your husbands, get your fathers, get your grandfathers out there talking about healthcare issues related to guys. It always strikes me as amazing that a man will not talk to his best friend about a medical issue or condition that he has, but a woman will talk to a perfect stranger about it. And, you know, this is something that it's in our genetic makeup. We're wired in a different way. But we have to be out there beating the drums and talking about the fact that men are vulnerable. We do get certain types of diseases. We do need to talk about the fact that we have these diseases, what we're doing about it, how we're trying to control it. I will very candidly, it upsets me greatly when I talk to men and I say, you know, I need you to be able to talk to so-and-so about your prostate cancer journey or issue. And I get responses that say, I don't want to talk about it. That was a chapter that's closed in my book. and, you know, I'm fine now and I'm beyond it and so on and so forth. I can't imagine a woman who would do that, would say that sort of thing. You know, when the Braves had Prostate Cancer Awareness Day at the stadium and there were 30 guys who maybe walked out on the field. Now, you know, that's a shame, because if it was Breast Cancer Awareness Day, there'd have been 1,000 women out on the field.
Right.
And, you know, we have to be willing to talk about the issues. We have to be willing to confront the issues. And, you know, the more it comes out in the open and the more we get behind the research that we can be doing, the better it is. We have some events coming up. We have our Bowl for Dad coming up February the 4th. That's the day before the Super Bowl, which is to raise money for prostate cancer. It's going to be out at the Norcross Bowling, Brunswick Zone in Norcross, which is out on Spalding and Holcomb Bridge. But, you know, it's stop by. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. Get registered and, you know, help us raise money to defeat prostate cancer. I mean, that's what it's for. It's the it's to cure prostate cancer, which right now is a tough disease. We don't have a way of really dealing with it effectively. Some people say it's a slow-growing cancer. Yeah, it can be. It can also be a very aggressive cancer, as I will attest to. But the whole idea behind it is that we need to be raising money. We need to be raising funds. Our Dash for Dad, which is an event that, again, is to raise money for curing prostate cancer, is in June. It's the day before Father's Day. You know, come on out. Help us. Get family members to come out. It's a family event.
Where will that be?
Not sure yet that we've got the location, but in prior years we've had it right here in Sandy Springs at the Home Depot and Costco, right around the corner from where we are today.
Okay.
On Peachtree Dunwoody Road. Might be there again, but look for signs. There will be billboards. There will be advertisements. You'll hear it on WSB radio. But the whole idea is that we're trying to raise awareness of these issues and to get funding in order to help defeat some of these things.
Great. If a person wanted to help you, be that either from a volunteer basis or from a financial basis, how could they get a hold of you?
Well, our website is www.menshealthandwellness.org, and you can also reach us at www.4dad.org. We are the 4Dad organization. We're there to all of our events are 4Dad, and you know, it's to keep Dad healthy and well. That's what we do.
Fantastic. Joe, I think you have a great organization, getting the awareness out, getting these men into doctor's office, regular screenings, the work that you're doing in terms of trying to get a men's health center put together here in Atlanta. All of it's fantastic. And I just want to applaud your efforts for what you're doing, especially considering that you're not a doctor. I think that makes it even more great that you're doing this, seeming that so many people from the medical industry would normally champion this, but you're actually doing it just based off your own experiences. Really, it's excellent work, and I'm hopeful that we had a lot of men listening today that are going to take some of this advice to heart and actually start using this in helping their lives and being more aware of what's going on and not having their heads so much in the sand.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure being here. I love having the opportunity to talk about these things, and you know, if we can have some impact and get guys doing what will be in our best interest rather than being counterproductive, then we're making great strides.
That's excellent. All right. Thank you so much again, Joe. And this is Derek Van Dam signing off on Make a Difference Radio.